where you've been so long. Oh, I don't let you deal with them. I don't never let your deal with them. Honey, don't let your deal with them until that last old dollar's gone. Where did you get them high button shoes? Where'd you get that dress you wear so fine? She said, I got the service from a railroad man. I got the dress from a wife in the mines. Now don't let you deal. Don't never let you deal. Don't let you deal them until that last old dollar's gone. Get a little more guitar for me, Bruce. Home sweet home to me. And don't let your deal, don't never let your deal, I don't let your deal until your last old dollar's gone.
I think of this city and I have fond memories and I have to cross my legs. I love this town. I've had some harrowing and terrifying experiences here that I relive at every opportunity. I know why you're here. I know, yeah. I guess so. I think I'll sing the song that got me into trouble here just for old time's sake. It's not liable to do it again, but it was great. God, I was playing a club. What an awful place to play it was. But the people were nice, and the crowd was nice. The people who ran it were nice. But the place was constructed not so much for music, perhaps. No, it wasn't. No, I won't. Don't you either. I think the opening act was a guy who juggled buzzsaws. In this. I was at Dooley's, yeah. I mean, I have fond memories of the place, but not for the musical things that it gave you. But. I got a long, tall mama. The girl stands about 7'9". I got a long, tall mama. She's standing about 7'9". And when we started to love him, she hollered, "Lord, David, take your time. When come down to making love, people, the gorilla knows her stuff. When come to making love, I say, the gorilla don't know her stuff. I swear she squeezed me so tight, I holler, Lord, mama, that's enough. She got a brand new motion, people's one she calls on. She got a brand new way to shake it, one she calls on. She put that special quiver on you, make a poor man leave his home. Well, first you do a little less, yeah, and then she do a little less. First you do a little less, Lord, and then she do a little. When she throws on the full steam, make a freight train jump its track. She go like this. Girl like to tease me. What can I say? Long, tall, fine, and handsome, about half as sweet as she could be. Long, tall, fine, handsome, half as sweet as she could be. To satisfy this woman takes more than a bumblebee. I got a long, tall mama, stands about 7'9". I got a long, tall mama, girl, stand about 7'9". And when we're starting to love, she holler, Lord, David, take your time. I say, yeah. Oh. Got me in this I don't know how to pronounce this word. Concupiscent mood. Does anybody know that word? That's a $50 word, man. It took me a long time to learn that, but you know, if you write songs and you're interested in the kind of things I'm interested in, you have to learn a lot of words for sex. So, and I just talking about it means I won't get any tonight. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I know in front what it's all about. I mean, I've been doing this for years enough to know this, you know. And that's the price a man's honesty brings him, you know. Come out and talk about... Did you see Tootsie? One of my favorite things about the movie was that one point when Jessica Lange tells him, "Oh, for once I'd love one man just to come right out and say, boy, I'd really love to sleep with you, but they always play those games." Right? And the next night he says, "Gosh, I'd really love to sleep with you." She slaps his face, you know. Right on, you know. So I know I'm ugly, but I'm honest, you know. And it's gotten me in a lot of trouble, and I was really jealous to see that there's a gas station in South Tucson that has that as their motto. That's been my motto for decades, man. Oh, I don't know. Let me get off this. I'll get back on it later. There's no keeping me away from it, I guess. Sing you something about something that gets you in the mood, you know. No. If I'm going to get you in the mood, it has to be about death. Nothing makes people want to fuck so much as talking about death. I'll tell you that right now. Death? Oh, no. Come here. I'm telling you, I've been a student of this. Why do you think somebody gets into all this in the first place, you know? Really? You know, somebody like me, I've obviously spent a lot of time practicing guitar, you know? Why? It was a flat cinch. I wasn't going to get any on my good looks, right? So I know. Now little Jesse was a gambler, folks, night and day. He used crooked cards and dice. He was a good-natured fellow, but, you know, like a lot of handsome men, he had no soul. His heart was hard and cold as ice. Now the police walked up and shot my buddy Jesse down. The boy began to die today. Some acquaintances gathered about his bedside to hear the last words he had to say. He said, I guess I ought to know how I want to go. How you want to go, Jesse? I want to eat crap shooters to be my pallbearer. Get them all dressed up in black. There'll be 9 crap shooters going to the cemetery and 8 crap shooters coming back. I want a gang of gamblers gathered round my coffin sign with a crooked card printed on the hearse. Don't you hypocrites try and tell me you're going to grieve after my ass. My life's been a doggone curse. I send poker players out to the graveyard to dig my grave with the ace of spades. I want a bunch of black people out there gambling with the high sheriff playing blackjack leading the parade. Look here, I want the judge and solicitor to jail me 14 times to put a pair of dice in my shoes. I have a deck of tally-ho cards for my tombstone. I got the dying crapshooter's blues. And that ain't all he wanted, neither. He said, I want 16 real good crapshooters and half a dozen bootleggers to sing your song. I want a bunch of buck riders out there gambling with all the tens board while I'm rolling along. You know, he wanted a few of those women at the Hamilton Hotel and a few more off of old South Bell. He wanted us to fly in a couple groupies from Phoenix, but my buddy Jesse didn't pass out so swell. Oh, his head was aching. Heart was pumping. Little Jesse went down, bouncing and bumping. Oh, don't be standing around, little Jesse cried. He wanted everybody to do the Charleston while he died. 1 foot up, a toenail dragging. They threw my buddy Jesse in the hoodoo wagon. Run here, mama, with that can of booze. I've got the dying crapshooter's blues. I'm passing out now with the dying crapshooter's blues. You guys, you sing? All right, everybody together. Volare. No, only kidding. I'd love to see that sometime, man. I'd love to see Pete Seeger lead everybody in Volare or something, man. And here he is, Domenico Modugno. There's a name from the past, man. Domenico Modugno. Oh, wait, let me. That has not, okay, I'll sing this song, only I want help on this. The chorus goes something like this. The chorus goes exactly like this. Well, that's the way that the world goes round. You're up one day, the next you're down. Half an inch of water and you think you're gonna drown. That's the way that the world goes round. Right, John Prine wrote the song. I wasn't trying to hide that fact. I like that. I would have pointed it out eventually, but as a result, about half of my rap on the song is now destroyed. But He felt he was doing a civic duty, I know. And I know I have to be careful. The cop shop's right across the street here, isn't it? Okay. Ready? Ready? Well, that's the way that the world goes round. You're up one day, half an inch of water. That's the way. Yeah, now I understand a lot more about Tucson. Guys are real mellow, aren't you? One more time. Okay, you just need a little more practice. I know. Hey, I can understand it, man. You should have met the desk clerk at the hotel today, you know. Desk clerks in the first place are hired on the basis of IQ. I don't know any city in the country that will permit anybody to operate a desk with an with you know at their hotel with an IQ higher than room temperature. But this, yeah, that's around 100 here. So they around here, I think they go by shoe size. It's I mean, she was a lovely young lady, but I don't know. Oh, okay, all right. We'll try it again, all right. Well, that's the way that the world goes round. You're up one day. Not bad. Well, I know a gal, she got a lot to lose. She's a real good woman, just a little confused. She got muscles in her head she ain't ever used. Thinks she owns half of the town. Oh, she get a little drunk and get an itchy nose. Go home and beat her husband with a rubber hose. Then she take him out to dinner and buy him new clothes. That's the way that the world goes around. That's the way that you're up one day. Half an inch of water and you think you're gonna drink. Sitting in the bathtub counting my toes. When the radiator broke, the water all froze. I was stuck in the ice without any clothes, naked as the eyes of a clown. I was crying ice cubes, hoping I'd croak. When the sun through the window, ice all broke. Got up and laughed, I thought it was a joke. That's the way that the world goes round. That's the way. You're up one day, the next half an inch of water. I'd like to take this opportunity to complain not about the gentleman who shouted out, but about John Prine. He did one thing really badly when he wrote this song. We've just done all of it. That's it. With the padded solo and my coaxing you to sing along, you know, which is only to drag the sucker out. It's been over for about 25 seconds now. But, I, you know, I mean, I like it. I told him, you know, that I wish he'd written more. And, you know, he said, oh, write it yourself. Kid. Well, actually, I thought about it. I know a couple of stories, true stories, that are exactly to me what the song is about. But they can't be fit into verses. So what I'll do is I'll tell you the stories. And you can't stop me. And these are true stories, both having to do they both happened when I was living in New York City, starving my ass off, man. I was playing in places we called basket houses, because the money that you got was, you passed a basket, whatever people gave you, that's what you, you know, survived on. And I had a lot of friends who were doing the same scene, you know, we'd sleep on the stages at night, and shared food, drugs, and crabs. We didn't care, you know. The good old days, man. I had this one friend. We got invited to play a party in Westchester County where the rich people lived. These folks were, these people we played for were rich from having money. And they were very sweet. And they were very generous. And my friend got so drunk that there was no chance of him making it home. So the people who gave the party were very sweet, and they let him stay overnight in their house. And when he woke up in the morning, he discovered that the room that they'd given him to sleep in was all white. Everything in the room was white. The ceiling was white. The walls were white. The drapes were white. The bed was white. The sheets, the pillowcases, bedspread, desk, chair. Everything in the room was white except the bottle of ink that he'd knocked over on his way to the bathroom. There were black hands, knee, and foot marks all over the room. He saw that. He knew he had no way to repay the damages. Looked around. Ran. That's it. He split. He could not handle it. It was too much for him. After a couple of years, he got to... It wasn't so much that he felt guilty, I think. I mean, he was drunk and stuff, but he felt karma, you know, goes around, come around. He still didn't have any money to begin to pay the damages, but he felt he should at least confront the people and apologize to them for what he'd done. And it was a couple of years later, and it took a lot of guts. I admire him for it. He took the train up to wherever it was, Westchester, I forget, you know, Armonk or someplace, and got out to the people's house, and a maid let him in. Told him who he wanted to see. She said, wait in here. And she showed him into the living room. She went to get the lady of the house. And the guy looked around in the living room. He sat down. He heard a crunch. It was the chihuahua. He looked at it. It was dead. He split. That's the way that the world goes round. You're up one day, the next you're down. Half an inch of water and you think you're gonna drown. And the other story is also about a dead dog. Don't laugh, Jerry Jeff Walker built his house on a dead dog story, so. There are a lot of good songs about dead dogs. This is going to become one of them. No, this is true. Both these stories, you know, they're not like big punchline stories. They're just, you know, life. They're true. A friend of mine had a wonderful dog, and it eventually became a little old. It became a lot old, and it died. And he didn't exactly know what to do with it, so he called up the ASPCA, and it being New York City, he had to try 17 different numbers until he found the right one. And that one was in New Jersey. He said, well, you know, what do I do with the dog's body? And they said, bring it here. He said, to New Jersey? They said, you want to bury it on Fifth Avenue? I mean, yeah, bring it out here, man. What are you going to do? He said, well, I mean, I don't have a car. I mean, how am I going to get out there? I said, well, you take the number 11 bus out of the Port Authority bus terminal. He said, I can't get on the bus with a dead dog in my arms, man. He said, no, of course not, man. You put him in a box, you know. He said, you don't understand. This is a big dog. So, well, what some people do is they put him in an old suitcase or a trunk or something, you know. He said, okay, and he stuffed the dog into an old suitcase, went down to the Port Authority bus terminal. I mean, listen, this may seem humorous to you, but what are you going to do, you know? He went down to the Port Authority bus terminal, found out where the number 11 bus left from, and then realized he didn't know exactly what stop to get off or where to go or anything. So he put down the suitcase, went into a phone booth, and this time he knew the right number, got the guy, got the directions, came out, and somebody had stolen the suitcase. I would have given a lot of money to have seen the look on that junkie's face when he opened the sucker. That's what... Well, that's the way that the world goes round. You're up one day, the next you're down. Half an inch of water and you think you're gonna drown. That's the way that the world, that's the way that, that's the way that the world goes round. Thank you, cat lovers. I really love dogs myself, but when I, in the old days when I lived in the village, I used to keep cats. Disgusting. But, I liked the cats and everything. First thing my road manager said when we got off the plane, I mean, he'd never been to Tucson before. He looked around, he said, hey, this would be a great area to keep cats, you know. You don't need a litter box, just put them out, you know. And he's like, I got to be careful about what I say about towns. Last night I was in, isn't that silly? I'll think of it in a minute. It's the capital of New Mexico. It's not Albuquerque. It's Santa Fe. You got it. And Arlo had told me, it sounded to me like a good news, bad news story. Santa Fe has more masseuses per capita than any city in the United States. That's the good news. The bad news is all they do is give massages. They booed me for that, man. I said, fuck you. I have a right to my own concupiscence. I'm usually good with words, but that one is really a tough one. And that's a good word, man. Go look it up if you can figure out what the hell I said. So you're probably wondering what I'm going to play next. I have no idea. I'm not going to play Sammy's song. I can't remember it to save my soul. I'll tell you what. I was talking to Arlo about this song, and I started to tell you about it myself before I... I'll play it for you. I don't know what to say about it. It's one of those songs. It's there, you know? So, I know how you feel, honey. It's a blues. It's just for you. That's one thing I never mind is the sound of a child crying at my concerts because I've heard some of the tapes back myself. This is for Arlo, I thought you meant. Quit crying out for more. I made love to you, darling, till you quit crying out for more. Well, I loved you, girl. I got my knees and elbows sore. Yeah, we made love in the hallway, fell down off the bed. I think we were in the bathroom for a little while. Rolled on underneath a bed. I looked around this morning, girl. The sheets was torn to shreds. To hear you crying, babe. I love to love you, darling. Love to hear you crying, babe. I love to love you, girl, till it runs all down your leg. Your sweet sighs and cries, the music to my ear. Your sweet sighs and cries are music to my ear. Till the cops broke down the door this morning crying, there's someone getting mining in here. don't know, man. That's a strange town out there. I wouldn't have dared sung it for them, man. It was too much of my inner soul being bared for them to be. No, I mean, they were really neat, but you have to keep everything on a real ethereal plane, I have a feeling, you know? It's like, some guy told me that it didn't rain because he danced, you know? And, he did. He told me that. You know? If I'd seen him dance, I don't know. It's kind of the Grateful Dead school of dancing, you know? Good, huh? But I sang one song I think maybe I'll sing tonight. As you've guessed, I try not to do the same songs every night, and I never have any idea what the hell I'm going to do when I get up here. But I did this last night, but I kind of like it. And after all, this is, although it would be kind of hard for them to admit it, I think this is as much a part of the Old West as their city is. And maybe more, man. I think this was probably always a wilder area, Tucson. Well, for the guys, anyhow, you know. Guys are going, oh, whoopee! The girlfriends are going, oh, John. Can't dress them up and take them anywhere, can you? Those other years, those dusty years, when we drove the big herds through. I tried to forget the miles we rode, the Spanish Johnny, you. He'd sit beside a water ditch when all his hurts was in. Child but sang to his mandolin. He sang the old songs, the old talk, and the dealings of our game. Spanish Johnny seldom spoke, but he sang the songs of Spain. His talk with men was vicious talk when he was drunk on gin. But those were golden things, he said to his mandolin. He sang the old songs and the old talk, demons of our game. Spanish Johnny seldom spoke, but he sang the songs of Spain. But we had to stand, we had to judge, we had to stop him then. See those hands so gentle to a child. It killed so many men. He died a hard death long ago, before the roads came in. And the night before he swung his son to his man of end. We carried him out in the morning light, a man who'd done no good. We laid him down in the cold, cold ground, stuck in a cross of wood. And then a letter we wrote to his kinfolk, tell him where he'd been. We shipped it on down to Mexico, along with the mandolin. Because when I was in elementary school reading in social studies about the pioneers that crossed the country, I thought these guys had a great time. What a great thing. They were able to ride horses and shoot guns. Heaven, you know? I mean, when I learned this song from a singer named Rosalie Sorrells, it made me, you know Rosalie, great singer. It made me realize what a really terrifying thing it must have been for the people who settled from the East to come here. Because much more frightening than space is for astronauts. Because, you know, all the astronauts, they're all scientists. And they believe in their technology. But the people who crossed this country knew in front that their technology sucked. They knew that every piece of equipment they had would need to be repaired, that they would have to confront not only all kinds of very severe natural forces of nature, you know, like extreme cold, extreme heat, dryness, flood, you know, all that kind of thing, that some of them would die on the journey, that, you know, whole families wouldn't make it, that not only were there wild animals, but there were also humans who wanted to defend their land very strongly. Aside from whatever greed was involved, a great deal of bravery was called for. And this particular song is a Mormon song. I'll just sing it to you. And we listen to the howling of the lonesome roving wolves. The groans of the dying were heard in our camp. The cold, chilly frost, it was seen on our tents. And the fear in our hearts can never be told. As we listen to the howling of the lonesome roving wolves. The grave of the stranger we left on the plain,
down beside the green grove, there forever to remain. To remember his grave, we left ashes and coals to keep him from the savages and the lonesome roving wolves. Well, early next morning, just at the break of day, the fife and the drum, they did play reveille. Our mules were brought in, our baggage to pull, and now we'll bid adieu to the lonesome roving wolves.
Hell to catch your voice in the middle of that. I'd like to sing a song for... Well, I'm living in Chicago now, and we lost our best Cubs fan last year. Yeah, Steve and Arlo and I were supposed to do a tour together, and we had to do it without Steve. And Steve never got to see... This may sound very trivial to you, and I felt half guilty about feeling it, but I feel it very strongly, and I discovered a lot of people who knew Steve felt the same way. Somehow it was... just worse. I mean, it couldn't have been any better, right? And it really couldn't have been worse. He went. There's no way it could be worse. But somehow it was worse because he didn't get to see the Cubs win the division championship. Steve was the biggest Cubs fan there ever was. He wrote this tune. This is about the Cubs. Cubs are a winning team, you know, but they proved it after Steve died. So... By the shores of a lake they call Michigan, where a wind they call the hawk blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying as his midnight hour tolled. And his friends gathered around his bedside. They knew his time was short. So on his head they put a bright blue cap for his all-time favorite sport. The dying man said, "Hey, it's getting dark in here. It's getting cold, and I guess soon I'll have to go. But before I leave the lineup, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago? When the baseball season rolls around, when the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the land of the free, the home of the brave, and the doormat of the National League." The dying man said, "The law of averages states that everything will happen that can. But the last time the Chicago Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs led me down the primrose path. They robbed my youth from me. I'd go up, sit in the bleachers, forsaking my teachers in flagrant truancy. And of course, one thing led to another. Soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, tennis, hockey, lacrosse, backgammon. But what can you expect when you raise up a young man's hopes and then just crush them like so many paper beer cups? Year after year after year after year after year after until those hopes are no more than just so much popcorn for the pigeons underneath the L tracks to eat. Oh, I know I'll never see Wrigley Field again before I go to my final rest. But fans, if you've got your pencils and scorecards ready, I'd like to give you my last request. I want a double-header funeral in Wrigley Field on a sunshiny weekend day, no lights. Have the organist play the national anthem and a little na-na-na-na, hey, 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 goodbye. Get the bullpen pitchers to carry my coffin and get the groundskeepers to clear my path. I want the umpires to bark me out at each base in all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play two. Somebody find Jack Brickhouse. Can we come on down here for just one last interview? I want all the Cubs to run out to the middle of the field and have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody two hot dogs and a frosty shake, and I'll be ready to die. You know, his friends couldn't take too much of that. They said, don't talk that way. Cut it out. That's a shame. The dying man said, don't cry. We'll all meet by and by and near that heavenly hall of fame. He said, I've got season tickets to watch the Angels play now. And that's just what I'm going to do. But it's you guys here on Earth who are stuck with the Cubs, so I think it's me that should be feeling sorry for you. Just play me one more time. Play me that old Lonesome Losers tune. You know that's the one that I love the best. And then he closed his eyes and he slipped away from us. So I'll honor that Cub fan's last request. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when the baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the land of the free, the home of the brave, and the doormat of the National
get here. Nice.
A pickle, just wanna ride on my motorcycle. I don't want a tickle, I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't wanna die, just wanna ride on my motorcycle. I know this song is stupid, but I tell you, I remember when I wrote this song, it's been like, oh, geez, I can't remember now, but it's got to be 20 years ago, something like that. But I remember it like it was, well, like it was about 20 years ago. I remember I was riding my motorcycle. I remember I was going down a mountain road. I was doing 150 miles an hour. I was playing my guitar. On one side of the mountain road, there was a mountain. And on the other side, there was nothing, just a cliff in the air. But I wasn't paying attention. I was just, you know, driving down the road. And all of a sudden, by accident, a string broke off my guitar. It broke right there, went flying across the road that way. Wrapped itself around a yield sign. Well, the sign didn't come out the ground. The string didn't break. Stayed wrapped around the sign, stayed in the other end of my guitar. I held on to my guitar with one hand, held on to my bike with the other. I made a sharp turn off the road. Luckily, I didn't go into the mountain, but I did go over the cliff. I was doing 150 miles an hour sideways and 500 feet down at the same time. I was looking for the cops. Because, you know, I knew it was, like, illegal. I knew that that was it. I knew I didn't have long to live in the world. that in my last remaining seconds in the world, I knew that it'd be my obligation to write one last farewell song to the world. Took out a piece of paper, pulled out a pen. I sat back and I thought a while, but I couldn't think of nothing. It was like a writer's block or something. I looked up for inspiration, and there, burning across the sky, I mean, clouds on fire, burnt in the sky, was the following words: I don't want a pickle, just want to ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want a tickle, I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to die, just want to ride on my motorcycle. I know it wasn't the most brilliant song I'd ever written, but I didn't have time to change it. But you know, the most amazing thing was that I didn't die. I survived to tell the tale. And I remember when I first started playing back 20 years ago, whatever it was. I remember I'd go into these little clubs and stuff, you know, and I wasn't really playing in them. I just carried my guitar in so I could get in for free. And I'd be sitting in there when somebody got sick or too drunk or didn't show up. They'd say, "Hey, Arlo, can you play something for a while until we can get somebody good?" And this would be the only song I knew. And I'd get up there and start singing this song and feel stupid and embarrassed and ashamed. People be looking at me like, "We paid for that." And so I started talking in the middle of the song, hoping never to get back to the chorus again. As the years went on, the song got longer and longer, till finally I could start this song in one town and finish it 3 weeks later on the other coast. Finally, I just quit singing it altogether. And years went by, till about 2 years ago, when I found out they were studying the lyrics to this song in colleges and universities around the country. I don't feel bad no more. It's okay to be stupid. It's smart to be stupid. I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to tickle. I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to die. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. Try and pick and play this one here. Go something like this. Lots of folks back east, they says, leaving homes every day, hitting the hot old dusty way to the California line, crossing the desert sands, they're all trying to get out of the old dust bowl. Think they're going to a sugar bowl, but here's what they find. For the police at the Port of Andres say, "You're number 14,000 for today, and hey, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boys, you ain't got the do-re-mi, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. California is a garden of Eden, it's a paradise to live in or sleep. So hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi." Wanna Now if you want to buy a house or farm that can't do nobody no harm, take your vacation by the mountains or sea. Don't swap your old cow for a car, you're better off staying right where you are. Better take this little tip from me, 'cause I look through the want ads every day, but the only thing that the papers always say is, hey, if you ain't got the Doremi, boys, you ain't got the Doremi, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee, California is a garden of Eden, it's a paradise to live in or see, but believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the Doremi, boy. If you ain't got the Doremi.
I thought I'd write a farm song of my own, and I thought I'd write it to my favorite farm, the tune of my favorite farm song, which is Old MacDonald. And it came out something like this. Because, you know, whenever you see stuff about farms in the news, they mention in the same breath banks. Which is, I don't know why that is. But I thought, Key G. It's just—it's really just like Old MacDonald, almost, except for there's a little bit of another tune in there somewhere. But you'll know what I mean. So I was thinking, if I wanted to go into farming business, what I'd have to do, and it'd be something probably like this. First, you run down to the banks, and you get yourself a loan for $80,000 cash. You can drive that tractor home. You can drive all day. You can drive all night. You can drive all day. You can drive over everything getting in your way. And you ain't gotta worry till a payback day down on the American farm. So you get some stuff and you spread it around to keep the bugs and the animals down, and you spray it on the crops and you pump it in the ground. But the bugs get bigger and attack the folks in town. You could spray all day, you could spray all night, but the bugs get bigger and they ain't afraid to fight. You could drive all day, drive all night, drive over everything getting in your way, and you ain't gotta worry till a payback day down on the American farm. Pretty soon the crops come up, your grower goes to cut them down, you put some in your brand new truck and hauls it all to town. But the more you grow and the more you spend, the less it's worth to the market in the end. Though you sprayed all day and sprayed all night, the bugs got big and was not afraid to fight. Though you drove all night, drove all day, and drove over everything getting in your way. Now it's driving you crazy 'cause you can't afford to stay down on the American farm. Problem when my old man was writing these songs too, because it wasn't just banks like today, and there was all kinds of other monster disasters, natural disasters going on. I mean, the topsoil was just blowing up in the air and being carried for hundreds of miles, thousands of miles everywhere, get dumped down somebody else's farm, covering up the farm, covering up the tractors and the houses, people and everything. And so people couldn't grow nothing, couldn't pay for nothing. The banks come in, end up with the farms, the people all split. But in spite of all them disasters, of course, there were all kind of normal disasters as well. Outlaws, for example. And there was one by the name of Pretty Boy Floyd. Now, Pretty Boy Floyd was a bank robber. But and although nobody considered him to really be like a philanthropist, there was a lot of people didn't consider him to be an outlaw either, in the sense that he was redistributing farms in the form of cash throughout lots of the countryside. And people got to like him, wrote songs about him. This is one of them. If you gather around me, children, a story I will tell about pretty boy Floyd the outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee on a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in his wagon, as in the town they rode. Their deputy sheriff approached them in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language, and his wife she overheard. Pretty boy grabbed a long chain, and the deputy grabbed a gun, and in the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. You know, he took to the trees and timbers, and he lived a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was added to his name. You know, he took to the trees and timbers on the Canadian River shore, but the outlaw found a welcome at many a farmer's door. You know, there's many a starving farmer, yes, the same old story told, how the outlaw paid their mortgage and saved that little home. And others tell you of a stranger who had come to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left a $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City. It was on a Christmas day. Come a whole carload of groceries with a letter that did say, you say that I'm an outlaw. Yes, you say that I'm a thief. Well, here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. You know, it's through this world I've rambled. I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six gun, and some with a fountain pen. But it's through your life you ramble, and it's through your life you roam. You won't ever see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
There's one thing we might know together, which we could sort of pick. And we've been actually playing together for a long time. You realize that? As a matter of fact, longer than that even. I remember back in 1967 or something like that, I was in a little radio station in New York playing weird songs. We were sitting around. No. Close, though. Had one of the letters, right? W. what was it? I remember we were up there, and we were supposed to be swapping songs. They got a whole bunch of pickers and singers up in there, and they're sitting around this little tiny room about half the size of this stage. And we were sitting around, Jerry Jeff was there, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, and a whole bunch of weird, strange people. And they kept coming to me, and I said, no, I don't want to sing yet. I don't, you know, because everybody was singing like a normal length song. And it got to me, and that ended the evening. I went on for a while. The song became kind of popular.
As a matter of fact, it was one of these stations that raised money by, you know, public subscription or whatever it is. And so they'd wait till the people donated a whole lot of money, and then they'd play it. And they got to be playing it all the time. Pretty soon they was taking money to stop playing it. They made more, actually, that way. But that was in the days when I used to play a lot of guitar, actually, because there was nothing else to do. There was nothing good on TV and stuff. And so I'm going to try and pick here a little tune. That's good enough, isn't it?
Take me down a little. I'm a little hot up here.
Well, you can bring this one up, too. It don't matter. One or the other. You can bring it up a little bit more for me. Because it's hard. I got to hear what I'm playing. You know what? Because otherwise I think it'd be something else. And that's probably good enough. Let's see if we can do this. I'll pick a tune here.
We'll get David back here in a little bit.
David said to me before, he said, listen, if you get me out there, don't make me sing any of them stupid songs of yours. So I thought I'd sing one now, and he split. Because I was wondering, you know, I was watching the president over in Europe when he was going over there talking to all the governments and stuff. And it made me start to think, what are we going to remember 300 years from now about what he says? Makes you think. I mean, everybody remembers George Washington. He cut down a tree, didn't tell a lie, threw a dollar away. What are you going to remember about these modern guys? I mean, maybe it's too soon to tell about Ronald Reagan, but even Jimmy Carter, remember him? That's what I mean. What are we going to remember 300 years from now? Probably something like this. President Carter got into his boat. He wasn't in a hurry and he wanted to float. Think about the country. Think about sin. Along swam a rabbit and he tried to climb in. This is true. This is the stuff that history is made out of. It's not that other stuff. I want you to know right now, people might be sitting in this very spot 300 years from now singing this dumb song. Because it's historic and significant. so I want you to help me out. I go along, swam a rabbit, and he tried to climb in. And then you go in a kind of a Gilbert and Sullivan way. Along swam a rabbit, and he tried to climb in. Okay, here we go. Wait a second. I'll do it first, and then we'll do it together. Okay. Along swam a rabbit, and he tried to climb in. That's good. Okay, we're going to go right to the chorus now. The chorus goes something like this. I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow old boat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Cause the bunny might be crazy and will bite me in the throat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Now, this is why David left. He didn't want to be part of this. But I want to tell you right now, if you learn this song, I mean, you heard a lot of music tonight. There's a lot more to come. But if you learn this song, I guarantee you one thing. On your way home, this is the one you're going to remember. That's right. It's these dumb songs that are historically significant that stay in people's mind. A rabbit attacked the president. Let's go over this chorus slow. I'll say it, and then we'll say it together. I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow woe boat, in my widow woe boat in the pond. Let's just review that much. I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow woe boat, in my widow woe boat in the pond. Because the bunny might be crazy and it bite me in the throat, in my widow woe boat in the pond. Because the bunny might be crazy and it bite me in the throat, in my widow woe boat. Oh, this is going to be good. It's kind of a short song, thank God, so we'll start from the top. President Carter got into his boat. He wasn't in a hurry and he wanted to float. Think about the country, think about sin. Along swam a rabbit and he tried to climb in. And he said, I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow old boat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Cause the bunny might be crazy and will bite me in the throat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Look at him swimming, look at him fly. His ears laid back and a gleam in his eye. Hissing through his front teeth, swimming like a seal. If you were the president, how would you feel? If you were the president, you'd say, I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow old boat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Cause a bunny might be crazy and it bite me in the throat, in my widow old boat in the pond. President Carter saved the day, splashed with his paddle and the rabbit swam away. Jimmy was a hero, he felt it in his bones, and he said in the words of John Paul Jones, said in the words of, I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow old boat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Cause a bunny might be crazy and will bite me in the throat, in my widow old boat. Once more for history, I don't want a bunny wunny in my widow old boat, in my widow old boat in the pond. Cause a bunny might be crazy and will bite me in the throat, in my widow old boat in the pond. I was watching TV about a week ago, maybe it was a year ago. And I saw all the demonstrations going on over in Europe about the American missiles going over there, you know. And so I thought I had to write a song about it, and so I did. And then 6 months later, so it must have been a year ago, I found myself over in Germany. They had invited me over to Germany to sing at one of these big demonstrations they had. And so I went over there, but I really went to straighten them out. And I told them, look, you folks don't understand. We got to have our American missiles here in Germany. Because, well, we can't have them at home. I told them, people at home don't want them. And not only that, if we had them at home, we'd never be able to use them. Because then the Russians be knowing where they're coming from. And then they'd be sending missiles over to us and bombing us and we'd die and stuff. So, we got to have our missiles here in Germany. They didn't understand. I think it was maybe a language problem or something. Well, I tell you, I knew I was understood because it wasn't 3 weeks later I got a telegram from Ronald Reagan saying, "Dear Arlo, saw you on the news the other night talking about American foreign policy. You explained it so clear and so wonderful that, well, even I'm beginning to understand it." I was watching the news tonight, and all over the world, people were singing and carrying signs. All over the world, everybody walking hand in hand through cities that I've been. And though I'm not there tonight, you know I'll be back again. I'll be back again. I'll be back again. I'm on a plane tonight for Germany, and all over the world there are lots of people just like you and me. All over the world who know the bombs must never fall again. All over the world, and we must all learn how to live as friends. All over the world. In the news tonight, all over the world, because we know that what we do is right. All over the world, everybody walking hand in hand. All over the world, through the streets of Europe and Japan. All over the world. I know it's got to be a difficult thing trying to grow up in America, almost any time, but especially now, especially if you're trying to grow up with parents that grew up during the 60s. Oh, that could be terrible. I know I got kids of my own. They say, "Dad, you're all right, but you got to learn to rock and roll and stuff." They want me to wear this sort of leather spiky looking things everywhere, and they think I'm weird. But I know I'm not the only one. Life is weird. It's great. So I thought I'd sing this for all my moms out there tonight. It's a weird song. It's for you. It goes something like this. Mom's just a throwback to the 60s generation. All that junk like peace and love is just an aggravation. Ain't got no use for transcendental meditation, Mom. Your universal love is such a trick. Mom said, "Dad, he might have been a Virgo or a head shop owner, all two freaks from San Francisco. A washed out surfer with his body golden tanned, or some lead singer in his psychedelic band, feeding me granola and other flaky stuff. You told me meat was hostile, but I just can't get enough. Being vegetarian just ain't quite my scene.
you can do with soybeans, Mom. Your universal love is such a drag. You know, Mom keeps telling me about a Daisy Woodstock. 500,000 space balls and all of them with their feet stuck. Freaking out on acid and what Bob Dylan says. I think she's trying to turn me into Joan Baez. Oh, Mom, can you tell me where your head's at? I'm sick to death of hearing about where you saw the Grateful Dead's at. Oh, Mom, don't you know this is the 80s? Oh, Mom, can't you relate to what the need is? Mom's just a throwback to the 60s generation. All that junk like peace and love is just an aggravation. Ain't got no use for transcendental meditation, Mom. Your universal love is such a tragedy.
I gotta sing this one more song here, cause I, oh, just cause it's, well, I tell you, I was up in Canada. Well, I'll sing it and I'll show you what I mean. The song goes something like this: inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down. I thought this was a nice little cute song I learned from Pete Seeger. But actually, I was up in Canada a few weeks ago, and I was coming down across the border, and they stopped me at Canadian customs and stuff, you know, check out the instruments and all that. And while I was standing there, I was just singing this song to myself, you know, over in the corner, just like, inch by inch, you know, row by row. And a customs guy come up and says, excuse me, but what's that you're doing? I said, I'm just singing a little song. He said, yeah, but what language is that now? I said, it's American. He looked at me and said, that ain't American. What's that stuff, inch by inch? It suddenly occurred to me that this man didn't know what an inch was. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, it suddenly struck me that this little song wasn't just some little dumb folk song. That this song somehow had captured the spirit of a resilient America. That's right. Captured the spirit of Americans that weren't going to buy any of that. Others, you know what I'm talking about? Like when you go to the gas pump and stuff is in liters and you don't know what it is and how much you're getting, nothing. They tried to push that. They did, and it failed. It's going away. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, my kids come home, they ask me how much is this and this, and I don't even know they're doing math. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about land of the free, home of the feet, and inches, and miles and stuff. And none of them meters and centimeters and whatever they got. Creeping in. This is not just from Canada, but it's coming in from everywhere. South and east and west. Creeping into America trying to change our way of life. This ain't no dumb little folk song. So I want you to help me sing this song. I'm trying to just muster up within me the
pulling weeds and picking stones. We are made of dreams and bones. Need a place to call my own, 'cause the time is close at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain to the music of the land. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down. Plant your rows straight and long, and season with a prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. Old crow watching from a tree, he's got his hungry eye on me. But in my garden I'm as free as that feathered thief up there. Inch by inch, row by row, we're gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile brown. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Wait a minute. Wait a second. I gotta get in tune first here. It's hard to tune sometimes, especially when the lights are shining in your eyes. Because I learned how to tune by sight. You know, it's just difficult. Wish I could learn to tune, you know, by ear like David and other people. But I could never see how they could get those pegs in their ears. So I never bothered. I know it's stupid, but it's true. Matter of fact, I was watching TV about a year ago or something. It was late night TV, and I saw an ad come on for the Roy Clark Big Note Guitar Book. Remember that? And had these colored stick-on dots you put on your guitar. And I thought it was a great idea, you know, because you just put your fingers on the different colored dots, and you're playing songs instantly, according to Roy. And but it suddenly occurred to me that if your guitar was out of tune, you had to put the dots in different places. And if it kept changing in and out of tune, you have to keep moving the dots around. So in a moment of inspiration, I decided that it would be really neat if you put the dots on your fingers. In which case, you probably wouldn't need the book. But, you know, I know Roy, and I know he needs the money, so I decided to help him out. And so I come up with a thing called the Arlo Guthrie Supplementary Tuning Arrows to the Roy Clark Big Note Guitar Book. And what this is, hang in here, I'm telling you, this is fascinating. What this is you get somebody else to tune your guitar for you. And then you get these little stick-on arrows, and you put them on these little shiny pegs up there, pointing, you know, whatever way they go. And then you put other ones on the wood, and so when your guitar goes out of tune, like, you just look down there and... You know what I'm saying? It was a great idea. Tuning arrows. Because I knew I wasn't going to be a folk singer forever, you know. I was going to grow up and mature one day. And, you know, like grow up and be a like multinational corporation and invest in South Africa and stuff. And so I had silos filled with tuning arrows everywhere around America. And then the recession hit. I lost everything. So I'm back to singing, as you can see. Because people come up and said, Arlo is a great idea, but it didn't have a professional look. people are going to think you're stupid, you know, if you're a professional using tuning arrows. I said, nobody can tell you're using tuning arrows. I said, sure, no one can tell if they're on the top. But when you flip your guitar over like that to see them, people are going to know you're using them. I said, oh, yeah. So this year I come up with what we call an auxiliary mirror. A little mirror that goes on the floor. You just walk over to it, and you look like you're listening. You know that listening look like? I mention it only briefly, because it's almost Christmas, and we got a bunch of them out in the back there, so. But to get on with this song here. On my way here, I was fortunate enough to stop off in Washington, D.C. Not really fortunate, but while I was there, I was invited to it. Well, I wasn't really invited, but I snuck into the Pentagon and because I wanted to see what they were doing in there. Because you could see all kinds of stuff on TV and reading in the newspaper, but you don't know for sure unless you've been there yourself, you know. And so I went to see what they were doing. And I found out something real interesting. Even though the fad has kind of faded around America, everybody in there was playing video games. And I thought, wait a minute, this is pissing me off. Because first of all, even if you don't like what they're supposed to be doing, doesn't excuse them from doing it. And not only that, they was playing with quarters that belonged to you and me. And so I got pissed off. And I went down way under the Pentagon to investigate further. I went down, you know, like a mile underground. And I was looking around, and I discovered something even more fantastic. They were manufacturing video games. I always thought they was made in Chicago. And as I was being escorted out, it suddenly occurred to me what was going on. That they had finally figured out a way to train everybody in America to defend America against aliens from outer space or anywhere else. And they figured out how to train us all for a quarter. This is the most advanced military training device technique ever yet devised by any country in the world. I mean, this puts us so far ahead of every country because even at the Pentagon, they realize that other countries don't have quarters. You know what I'm saying? That's right. Except for them Canadians. Them Canadians, we got to watch them. Because not only do they have quarters, but theirs are only worth about 17 cents. That's a threat to America right there, all across the top of America. I know you think it's just some stupid folk stuff I'm telling you, but think about this. I'm talking about everywhere in America. Every store, every shopping center, everywhere you know, I'm talking about everywhere. Any mom, dad, a kid, a dog with a quarter can learn to defend America. This is amazing. Remember when them games first come out? You put the quarter in, the game come up, you lost, that was it. And then how about a couple of years later they had them where if you was in the top 10, you could put your three initials up in there. And how this year in some states you could put your whole name in. And in some places next year you're going to have your name, social security number, address, telephone, stuff like that. That's right. Not only that, they got your fingerprints all over them buttons too. And it's all wired right into the Pentagon. And I want to say right now, you suckers been doing good at that stuff. When them aliens start coming, guess who's going? I could be wrong. I've been known to be wrong before. Mostly about every 4 years, but that's the way it is. But if I'm wrong, all that other stuff they're doing is serious. Me want to do this song here. You might have heard this before. Me too. This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of the restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. You know, that's why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want
at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. I was sitting in the back over there, trying to remember how many Thanksgivings ago it was. How many years ago it was on Thanksgiving when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But you know, Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in a church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray, Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there and found the place was filled with garbage. And we decided that it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the town dump. Well, we got there and there was a sign, a chain across the road saying, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so, with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. And we didn't find one until we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obi. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obi. I cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." It was after speaking to Obi for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter. And Obi said we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and we also had to go down and talk to him at the police officer station. But now, friends, there was only one of two things that Obi could have done at the police officer station, and the first thing was he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely. But we didn't expect it. Another possibility was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't counted on. We was both immediately arrested and handcuffed. And I said, "Obi, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." We sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. Now, friends, I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this was happening. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and it still is. And everybody was wanting to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster tire tracks, footprints, dog-smelling prints. And they took 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. They took pictures of the approach, of the getaway. And that's not to mention the aerial photography. But it was after the ordeal we went back to the jail. Obi said he's going to put us in a cell. He said, "Kid, I'm going to put you in a cell. Give me your wallet and your belt." And I said, "Obi, I can understand you wanting my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in the cell. But what do you want my belt for?" And he said, "Kid, we don't want any hangings." And I said, "Obi, did you think I was going to hang myself for littering?" Obi said he was making sure, and friends, Obi was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars. Roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the row, have an escape and get away. Obie was making sure all right, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? This is the song about Alice. She come by, and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, she bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep, didn't get up until the next morning. With the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And he sat down. A man come in, he said, "All rise." We stood up. Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, and the judge walked in with a C&I dog. He sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the C&I dog, and then at the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, and looked at the C&I dog. And Obie began to cry, because Obie come to the realization that this was a typical case of American blind justice. And there was no way the judge was going to look at the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, but it didn't matter. We was fined $25 each. We had to pick up the garbage in the snow. But that's not what I come to talk about tonight. Tonight I thought I'd be talking about this new registration we've been having for the last few years. You know this, because I was wondering about this registration. I mean, I guess I was wondering, how come the president sends people only to warm places? You know what I'm talking about? Lebanon and Grenada and Honduras and stuff. He don't send anybody up to Greenland or the Antarctic or stuff. And it suddenly one day it struck me, not very long ago, my God, he's right. America needs more beaches. It's true. Which is why they still got that building over New York City called Whitehall Street. That's where you used to have to walk in, get injected, inspected, defected, neglected, and selected. And I remember I had to go in there one morning a long time ago for my physical examination. So I got good and drunk the night before, because I wanted to look and feel my best that morning when I went in. I mean, I wanted to be like the all-American kid. When I went in that morning, I was hung down, I was brung down, I was hung up, I was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down. They give me a piece of paper, said, "Kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. I went up there, I said, "Shrink, I want to kill. I mean, I want to kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth, eat dead, burned bodies. I mean, kill, kill, kill." And I started jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill, kill." And he started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill, kill, kill." Till a sergeant come over, pinned a medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, "You're our boy." I didn't feel real good about it. But I proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, until I finally come to see the very last man. And I walked over. I said, "What do you want to see me about?" He said, "Kid, we only have one more question now. Have you ever been arrested?" And I told him the story of the Alice's Restaurant Massacre with full orchestration, five-part harmony, all kinds of other phenomena. He stopped me right there. He said, "Kid, did you go to court?" And I told him the story of the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with the circles and arrows in the paragraph. He stopped me again. He said, "Kid, I want you to go over. Sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid." I went over there. Group W. That's where they used to put you if you may not have been moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime. There was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There's mother rapers and father stabbers. Father rapers. There was father rapers sitting there on the bench next to me. And they was mean, nasty, ugly, horrible, crime-fighting guys. And the meanest, nastiest, ugliest, the meanest father raper of them all was coming over next to me. And he sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $25 and pick up the garbage." He said, "Kid, what was you arrested for?" I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench. Until I said, "And creating a nuisance." And then they all come back and shook my hand. And we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of stuff. We were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of stuff, having a good time. Till a sergeant come over, had some paper in his hand. He held it up, he went like this, he said, "Now, kids, this piece of paper's got 37 147 one on time, the crime details, the crime, they got a thing to say, can't do about the crime, I don't arrest an officer's name, they got a thing gotta say," and he talked for 45 minutes, but nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench. And I wrote down the massacre like I was supposed to, and I put down my pencil, turned over the piece of paper. And there on the other side of that piece of paper, in the middle of the other side, read the following words: "Kid, have you rehabilitated yourself?" I went over to the sergeant. I said, "Sergeant, you got a lot of goddamn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I mean, I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here on the Group W bench because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join army, burn women, kids, houses, children, villages after being a litter bug." He said, "Kid, we don't like your kind. And we're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington." And friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in a little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you this song tonight is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. There's even some of you could be in a situation like this. Soon. Sooner than you're sitting there thinking right now. And if you find yourself getting in a situation like this and you don't know what to do, there may be only one thing you can do. Walk into a post office somewhere. I mean, buy some stamps. Don't look like you're going to cause any trouble. Just buy your stamps real slow. Wait for a little line to build up behind you in the post office. And when you got some folks standing in a line behind you, jump up on one of them little tables with the pens on them. When everybody's looking at you, you go like this, you say, "You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant." Jump off the table and run out the door. Come back in about 5-10 minutes later, tell them you're going to register now. Now imagine you're working at the post office and some jerk comes in there buying slow stamps. He's holding up the line. He jumps up on the table with the pens on him, starts singing some dumbass song, jumps off the table, runs at the door, comes back in 5 minutes later, knocking people over, "Gonna register? You gonna register that man?" Imagine two of them buying double slow stamps, jumping up on the table, hand in hand, singing some dumb song in harmony, run out the door, come back in. Imagine three. Imagine this. Imagine you're a normal, average American human being working in the post office. But every day, 50 people come in there buying slow stamps, holding up the line, jumping up on the table, singing that dumb song, running out, coming in. You think you're going to sleep at night, but you ain't. Because about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, when you're supposed to be sleeping, you're going to sit up straight in bed. You're going to bounce up and down. You're going to jump up on top of the dresser. You're going to start going, "You can get anything you..." And your wife or husband, somebody going to be looking at you saying, "Honey, what the hell are you doing up there? It's 4 fucking o'clock in the morning." And you ain't going to know. Pretty soon, nobody in the post office be sleeping anymore. Which reminds me of something. Doesn't have anything to do with this song. But it's kind of a long song, so I thought I'd take a break here. But I know a lot of people worried about the president sleeping a lot, you know. This is not a new issue. It's something I don't bring it up for that. This is an old thing. Goes back to when he first got elected. Remember the Libyan planes was flying over. We were shooting them down and stuff, and nobody wanted to wake up the president. People in America got worried, not to mention the rest of the world. Not me. I thought he was good. I thought he was great. And I think history has proved me right, that the more he sleeps, the safer we're going to be. That's right. But, hey, let me say, in all fairness to the president, he is not the only one. There's a lot of presidents and presidentresses all around this world that need to be sleeping more. And a thought has occurred to me that if we could get them to all be sleeping together, they could be doing to each other what they've been doing to us.
Right.
I know it's wrong, but I can't get it out of my mind. That reminds me of something else, though. Doesn't have anything to do with that. But and this is true. I want to tell you, this is absolutely true. When Jimmy Carter got elected, I got an invitation to go down to the inauguration, and I knew I couldn't turn it down because I knew it'd be the only one I ever got. And so I went to Washington, you know, I put on a suit and the whole thing, went down there, and I was walking around, people partying everywhere, and somebody came, tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around. It was Chip Carter, the president's son, and I recognized him from TV and stuff. And I looked at him, and he looked at me. He said, "Arlo, I've just got to tell you one thing. We were moving our stuff into the White House, and in the Nixon record library, we found a copy of your record, Alice's Restaurant." I froze in time. I looked at Chip Carter with my laser eyes beamed into his soul. I said, "Chip, was it open?" And in slow motion, he nodded. It had been open. And I want you folks to know that I didn't think about that for 10 years. It was just about 10 years. It was 1982. I was out in the Midwest somewhere. I was in a hotel room all by myself just watching TV. I wasn't playing that night. I wasn't even watching the TV. It was just going, you know. And I was just lying in bed thinking about stuff. And all of a sudden on the TV come the 10th anniversary Nixon reunion. Remember that? Probably not. But they let some folks out and had a big party in Washington in 1982. And I was just watching it on TV. And all of a sudden, I seen the face of Rosemary Woods. Remember her? Probably not. But she was the one that sort of got the president in trouble, President Nixon in trouble. Because it wasn't that, see, he liked to tape stuff. And he had all these tapes. It wasn't what was on the tapes that got him in trouble so much as what was not on the tapes. And Rosemary Wood was responsible for this gap in the tape. And suddenly I saw her face, and I jumped up and down on my bed. I jumped up on top of the dresser. I looked at the TV. I said, Arlone! How many things in the world are 18 minutes and 20 seconds long? How many things in the world are exactly 18 minutes and 20 seconds long? Imagine nobody's sleeping at the post office anymore. Pretty soon their bosses be having the same trouble. And then the boss's boss, and then the boss's boss's boss. And I could see about 6, 7, 8 months from now, they'll be sitting around the table in the Oval Office having a big cabinet-type meeting. They'll be sitting there, be real important, so a bunch of them be sleeping. And in the middle of that conversation, I could see one of them jumping up on the table in the Oval Office and start singing that song. And Ronald Reagan might wake up. Probably not. But if he did, I'd guess I'd always wonder if he'd been the only one to hear this. "You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
walk right in, it's around the bank, just a half a mile from the railroad track, and you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. I know I've been singing this song a long time tonight, but there was years I didn't sing this song at all. I forgot this song. I never thought I'd sing this song again. Even when Ronald Reagan was getting elected, he weren't for no registration and draft and stuff. I remember the day he changed his mind after the election. I said, oh God, no. Don't make me learn that song again. But I did. And I learned other stuff over the years. You know, I learned if you want people to hear you, you got to learn to sing loud. And if you want people to understand you, you got to learn to sing even louder than that. And do you know there's people within earshot of us tonight that's in desperate need of understanding. And so we're going to wait for it to come around again on this guitar. And maybe when it does, we can provide somebody with more understanding than they had when they got up this morning. Maybe not. I don't know. But you can help me out anyhow, okay? You can get anything you want at Alice's Rest, except in Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's. I said walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track, and you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's
Hey, David, if you're back there somewhere, come on out and help me out here. No, I met David up, I think, well, might have been in New York, but he's been up in Chicago. And I remember one time I was up in Chicago. It was 1970, and I was playing in an old bar up in there. And after the show, the owner come up. Come on, David. It was after the show, the owner come up and said, Arlo, there's somebody here wants to play you a song. And I said, oh, no. Tell him not to, you know, because sometimes you could be sitting there listening. You've just heard, I mean, in the most hopeful eyes and face of a human, you've just heard the worst song in the world, and you don't know what to say and stuff. So I said, no, have him send me a tape. He said, well, look, he's just right around the corner. I looked around the corner. There was a nice-looking young guy there. I said, what can I do for you? He said, look, I just want to sing you one song. I said, I tell you what, you buy me a beer, and I'll sit here and drink it. And as long as it lasts, you can do anything you want. He thought that was a good deal. And so he bought me a beer. I sat down. I started drinking. And he played me this song. Turned out to be one of the finer beers of my life. Where are you, David? Come on out. Key of G. This is a song by our good buddy, Steve Goodman. Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors, 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields.
passing trains that have no names, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Dealing card games with the old man in the club car. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. And feel the wheels rumbling neath the floor. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpet made of steel. Mothers with their babes asleep are rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rail is all they feel. If you know this, help us out. Good morning, America, how are you?
Oh, that's good.
Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans. Changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home and we'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream. The steel rail still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his songs again. The passengers will please refrain. This train got the disappearing railroad blues. And good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. Train to call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
One more time.
Oh, good night, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train to call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Hey, David. You know St. Louis Tickle? Maybe in C?
Thank you.
it off. You kick this thing off.
Don't you tell on me, but I'm stealing back to my same old used to be.
Good, play some guitar now. Look at the fool I've been. You don't believe I'm sinking, but look at the hole I'm in.